When depression gets worse on an antidepressant, it doesn't necessarily mean the patient has bipolar disorder or that they are sensitive to medications. Today, we detail 7 explanations for this paradoxical phenomena. Welcome to the Carlatt Psychiatry Podcast, keeping psychiatry honest since 2003.
I'm Chris Aiken, the editor-in-chief of the Carlatt Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, a psychiatric NP and a dedicated reader of every issue. This month, we featured a new study on an old controversy. Can antidepressants cause violence? The study is the best designed one we've seen to tackle this question, which dates back to the early 1990s when case reports were described on fluoxetine. The idea goes against the grain of practice, where SSRIs are used to treat anger and aggression due to conditions like personality disorders and intermittent explosive disorder. But it reminded us of another issue, one that we see a lot more often in clinical practice. Can antidepressants make depression worse? This is the kind of problem that even if it's rare, you're likely to encounter in psychiatric practice because the majority, 80% of antidepressants, are prescribed in primary care. The ones that get better are not likely to come to our doors, but the ones who don't respond or get worse will.
When a patient says they feel worse on an antidepressant, the first thing to do is to rule out physical side effects like nausea, fatigue, and insomnia. One to pay attention to is akathisia, as patients might have difficulty describing this inner sense of restlessness, which is more often associated with antipsychotics, but akathisia can occur on antidepressants as well, particularly serotonergic ones. And akathisia can cause anxiety, insomnia, even suicidality, so it might be the reason that their mood is worse on an antidepressant.
Dr. Aiken, how can serotonergic antidepressants cause akathisia? I thought it was caused by dopamine blockade.
It is thought that the inhibitory effects of serotonin have indirect effects on the dopamine system, and that it can lead to dopamine antagonism there in the striatum. Another side effect that's related to akathisia you might see on serotonergic antidepressants is restless leg syndrome, which is almost like akathisia at night. If that happens, you could add gabapentin or pramipexole, both of which treat restless legs and akathisia, and both of which have psychiatric benefits. Gabapentin helps sleep and anxiety, and pramipexole helps depression. But another option would be to switch to bupropion, Wellbutrin. In a randomized controlled trial, bupropion treated restless leg syndrome even when it was dosed in the morning, perhaps through its dopaminergic effects.
While we're on that subject, sleep disruption is another reason that antidepressants can make people feel worse. Bupropion often gets a bad rap here because it's thought to be an activating antidepressant, but it actually causes initiation insomnia at about the same rate as SSRIs. On the other hand, the SSRIs tend to lighten sleep, making sleep more restless, while bupropion tends to deepen sleep quality. And if your patient has poor sleep quality, they may not complain of it directly. They may just say that they're tired, can't concentrate, and are easily frustrated and can't manage stress. We thought of 6 antidepressants that are pretty favorable when it comes to sleep quality. The first 3 have sedating effects, so they're good to give when the patient has trouble falling asleep. Trazodone, nifazodone, and mirtazapine. And the other 3 that are relatively non-sedating, vilazodone, that's Vibrid, vortioxetine, Trintellix, and of course bupropion, Wellbutrin. So Dr. Aiken, once you've ruled out side effects and sleep problems, what else goes through your mind when a patient tells you they feel more depressed on an antidepressant?
After side effects, the most common reason is bipolar disorder. For a long time, psychiatrists debated whether antidepressants even caused mania. There were studies showing that it did, and some showing that it didn't. But in my mind, the issue was pretty settled around 2014, when Alexander Victorin published a large study of over 3,000 patients in the American Journal of Psychiatry. His team focused on the first 3 months after starting an antidepressant, and they only looked at bipolar patients. They found that when antidepressants were taken on their own as monotherapy, the risk of manic switching was threefold elevated. On the other hand, if they were taken with a mood stabilizer, there didn't seem to be an increased risk. By the way, lamotrigine was not counted among those mood stabilizers, and it doesn't have very strong anti-manic effects.
So does that mean it's safe to give an antidepressant as long as they are on a mood stabilizer?
Not exactly. This was a large study, but it wasn't taking a very fine-grained look at the symptoms. They were only counting the most extreme events, switches into full mania. Other studies have found problems with antidepressants in bipolar even when they're given with a mood stabilizer, problems like mixed states and rapid cycling. And in my experience, those are the things you're more likely to see in practice, because these antidepressants really aren't powerful enough to flip someone from depression all the way to full mania. More likely what they do is they fail to treat the depression, and they sprinkle manic symptoms on top of it, and that's called a mixed state. Now, all these things are clearly less risky when a mood stabilizer is on board, but then again, staying up all night is also less risky with a mood stabilizer, and we wouldn't advise a person with bipolar disorder to do that.
But aren't there studies where antidepressants treat bipolar depression?
There are, but most of them have design flaws, like small sample size, enriched design, or lack of a placebo arm. In the well-designed studies, like the one from Gary Sachs's group that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, antidepressants did not work for bipolar depression. My take on all this is that antidepressants probably help a minority of patients with bipolar disorder. Terence Ketter estimates that it's about 1 in 30, and they possibly work better in bipolar 2 than bipolar 1, but they also have a high chance of causing harm and an even higher chance of doing nothing at all. Of course, there's another chance built in there, which is that they're going to have a placebo effect, and that's what you're going to see a lot of in your practice. So antidepressants might look a lot more effective when you use them in practice than they actually pan out to be in the research. And again, what I see them causing most often is mixed states. When a patient develops mixed features on an antidepressant, they are not going to call you up and say, "Hey, that antidepressant you gave me is giving me mixed features." Instead, they're likely to just say that it's making their depression worse. They'll feel anxious, wired, like they're crawling out of their skin, driven to do something but they don't know what to do, agitated. Antidepressants in bipolar disorder can turn a depression, which is a passive, inactive state, into dysphoria, which is a desperate state that craves urgent relief.
That makes sense, because mixed states are more severe than depression. They have higher rates of suicide, substance abuse, and psychiatric hospitalization.
And that brings us to the third kind of patient who can get worse on an antidepressant, patients with unipolar depression with mixed features. This diagnosis is new in DSM-5, and you don't have to have bipolar disorder to have it. It's actually quite common in unipolar depression. The largest meta-analysis on this found that 1 in 4 patients with depression had at least 3 manic features during their depression, and 3 is the DSM-5 cutoff for mixed features. There are at least 2 guidelines on how to treat depression with mixed features, and they emphasize minimizing or avoiding antidepressants and using treatments for bipolar depression and mixed states. But the truth is, we don't know much about how to treat these conditions. There's some evidence that antidepressants can make them worse, but on the other hand, there's some evidence that people get better with antidepressants on them. It seems to depend a lot and vary a lot by patient.
Most of the patients I see in practice who have mixed features are already taking an antidepressant.
That's true, and the first goal there is to figure out if that antidepressant is making things better or worse. But that's easier said than done. And it's also not easy to just yank that antidepressant away. That could set off withdrawal symptoms, particularly if it's a serotonergic antidepressant, and those withdrawal symptoms can mimic a mixed state. If it is clear that the antidepressant has made the mixed features worse, I would taper it off. But if there's any doubt, I'd tend to leave it there. particularly if the mixed features are part of a unipolar depression and not a bipolar depression. And while leaving the antidepressant there, I would try to treat the mixed features with something we know can work for it. Right now, lurisodone Latuda has the best evidence for unipolar mixed features. It almost got FDA approved for that condition. And after lurisodone, I'd use any medication that's appropriate for bipolar disorder. Ideally, you'd want to use something that can treat both mania and depression, like lithium or quetiapine. But if the manic symptoms are more prominent, you might use something with more anti-manic effects, like carbamazepine or valproic acid. And if the depressive symptoms are more prominent, you might even go with something that treats bipolar depression but doesn't have much potential against mania, like lamotrigine, Lamictal. Once the patient starts to improve significantly, I might then try to taper off the antidepressant if there's a possibility that it was making things worse, but I'd do that very slowly over at least 3 months.
We covered this in our January 2018 issue, which has a link to the Bipolarity Index. This is a validated rating scale that uses non-symptomatic markers of bipolar, like age of onset, treatment response, and family history, to assess the likelihood that a patient has bipolar disorder on a 100-point scale. It's particularly helpful when faced with mixed features because the symptoms are so hard to identify. They can look like anxiety, PTSD, or even ADHD.
Mixed features are an area of diagnostic as well as treatment confusion. But we do know that, regardless of whether the patient is actually diagnosed with bipolar disorder or not, the more markers of bipolar disorder they have, such as family history and age of onset and highly recurrent depression, the more likely it is that an antidepressant will worsen their mixed features.
Another area where we see this is in short-duration hypomania. About 1 in 20 patients with recurrent depression have brief hypomanias that are classic and recurrent, but never last long enough to meet DSM criteria for bipolar. They last less than 4 days. Jules Angst published a remarkable study where he showed that the chance of mood worsening on an antidepressant rises steadily with the duration of hypomania. From 1% in patients with no history of hypomania to 9% if they've had it for less than a day, 14% for 2 to 3 days. And then we get into the real bipolar levels, 4 days, the cutoff for bipolar 2. The risk is 27%. And if they've ever had hypomania for more than a week, the risk of getting worse on an antidepressant is 38%. But still, that's only 38%. It's not 100%. None of this is absolute. Another reason that patients can get worse on antidepressants is borderline personality disorder. And this isn't just because there's a lot of symptom overlap with bipolar. Borderline personality itself has been identified as a predictor of antidepressant worsening, and patients with borderline personality tend to get worse, more depressed, or more aggressive on tricyclics. For example, there are 2 studies showing this effect with amitriptyline. On the other hand, there are studies where some borderline symptoms improved on antidepressants, particularly SSRIs. So this is not an absolute. But keep in mind, those studies all had flaws. Enough that the evidence for SSRIs in borderline was considered too inadequate to recommend them in several recent reviews.
The 5th area where you may see worsening on antidepressants is in children and young adults. The FDA has placed a warning about suicidal ideation on antidepressants in people under age 25. Now, this is a complicated area because there is also some epidemiologic evidence that suicide rates have gone down in youth when antidepressants were used. But I don't think it's too much of a stretch to acknowledge that there are different kinds of depression out there, and that antidepressants might cause harm in some while helping others.
So how common is this problem?
While the risk of suicidality on antidepressants seems to taper off between the ages of 18 to 25, which is interesting because 25 is also the age where the brain is thought to reach full maturity, Then, in adulthood, from age 25 to 65, the risk of suicide on antidepressants stays flat. It doesn't go up or down. And after age 65, we start to see good news. It's there that we can detect a clear preventative effect against suicide with antidepressants in the elderly. In terms of how common this is, about 1 in 100 children will develop suicidality on an antidepressant. Actually, the rate is 3% on antidepressants and 2% on placebo, so I came up with 1% by subtraction. Now, in practice, you might see the classic intrusive suicidal thoughts that are described in the FDA warning, but more often the suicidality you're going to see is going to be part of a bigger picture of mood worsening that might include anxiety, insomnia, or even aggressive behaviors. In 2016, the Cochrane Group published an analysis of 70 trials of SSRIs and SNRIs, and they concluded that those medications doubled the risk of suicidality and aggression in children, but not adults.
And do we know anything else about which children are at risk?
The risk is greater under age 12, and it's also greater if the antidepressant is raised too quickly or the dose goes too high. The other risks bring us back to bipolarity. Children are much more likely to experience mood worsening, which may or may not include suicidality, if a close relative has bipolar disorder or the child has mixed features during their depression.
So far, we've covered 5 reasons why mood can get worse on an antidepressant. 1. Side effects like akathisia and insomnia. 2. Bipolar disorder. 3. Bipolar features like depression with mixed features or short duration hypomania. 4. Borderline personality disorder. 5. Age less than 25. And now for 6. Genetics. Some research suggests that patients with the short arm of the serotonin transporter gene, the SS genotype on SERT, are more likely to develop mania and possibly suicidality or just more side effects on a serotonergic antidepressant. This is by no means definitive, but then again, neither are any of the risks we mentioned in this podcast. This is about risk factors, not absolutes. And 7. Some patients are just more sensitive to medications overall. Maybe they have an anxiety disorder, or hypochondriasis, or maybe they are a slow metabolizer and can get really high levels of the med.
And while medication sensitivity is always a possibility, I would leave that as a diagnosis of exclusion. If you take away anything from this podcast, know that there are specific diagnoses out there that can cause patients to feel worse on antidepressants. Patients who have those specific problems, like bipolar or borderline or who are under age 25, might think of themselves as sensitive to medications, but that doesn't explain the problem. These problems are hard to diagnose. When you get that call from a patient who says the antidepressant you gave them is making them feel worse, they are unlikely to recite the DSM criteria for mania or quote the FDA warning on suicidality, even when the antidepressant is causing them to have manic symptoms or causing them to feel suicidal. Mania is more likely to present as a dysphoric, anxious, mixed state, and patients with suicidal thoughts may not share them with us for fear of being involuntarily committed, but they will share any number of symptoms, anxiety, restlessness, dysphoria, that might have worsened since starting the antidepressant.
So think carefully about these other possibilities before concluding that the patient is med-sensitive. That term doesn't tell us very much, other than to keep trying with antidepressants with lower and slower doses.
And if you believe that the antidepressant is ultimately going to do good, then going lower and slower and easing them into it is the right thing to do. That is what I was almost always taught to do when I trained in the 1990s, a time that David Healy called the antidepressant era, because we had a lot more faith in these medications back then. Pharmaceutical companies weren't required to release all of their data, and the new antidepressants seemed so much safer than the older ones that few psychiatrists really questioned them. One of those psychiatrists was Dr. Fred Goodwin, the former director of the National Institutes of Mental Health, who passed away last September. 20 years ago, Fred wrote a punchy paper called The Bipolar Spectrum and the Antidepressant View of the World that was the first thing to really wake me up to the idea that antidepressants could make mood worse. The co-author on that paper was a young Nasir Gami, who has since become one of the leading critical thinkers in psychopharmacology. Nasir is launching a new video course on psychopharmacology with CME credits. You can sign up at www.psychiatryletter.net. The first lecture starts February 20th, but you can watch anytime. We've ventured into some controversial areas in this podcast, so we've put the references online. Just go to thecarlattreport.com, click on podcasts, and you can find the entire script with link outs to the references. And now for the word of the day, one you've heard a lot in this episode, dysphoric.
Dysphoric comes from the Greek for distress that is hard to bear. It is a profound state of unease or dissatisfaction. Dysphoria is a symptom that is not tied to any specific disorder in psychiatry. It's been used in premenstrual dysphoria, gender dysphoria, and in mood disorders. It is often used to describe mixed states or depressive dysphoric mania. This seems fitting, as mania is an unsatisfied state of mind. That's why people with mania do things to excess. Nothing satisfies them. So while a depressed patient may delay seeking help for months or weeks because of hopelessness and low motivation, a dysphoric patient is likely to call for urgent relief. The late Dr. Athanasios Koukopoulos, who studied mixed states throughout his 50-year career, described it this way. The patient complains of anxiety, inattention, irritability, anger, despair, suicidal impulses, crowded or racing thoughts, rumination, and insomnia.
Join us next Monday, where we're going to review research on a novel antidepressant effect created by combining two readily available drugs, buspirone and melatonin.
Start earning CME credits with a subscription at thecarlattreport.com and use the promo code PODCAST to get $30 off your first year.
The Carlatt Report is one of few CME publications that depends entirely on subscribers. Thanks for helping us stay free of commercial support.